Hello and welcome to the Serious Games Podcast, all about playful methods for interactive trainings and facilitation. Let's get started.
Welcome back to the Serious Games Podcast, and today I will hand it over to Rob, aka Professor Game. He interviewed Chris, my partner in crime for the Debriefing Cube, a couple of years ago already. But then I realized I've never shared this interview on this channel, okay? So I reached out to Rob. He agreed. Here you go. Over to you, Rob.
Welcome once again to the Professor Game Podcast. We are today with not one, but two guests, Julian and Chris. And guys, are you prepared to engage?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Let's do this. This is one of the very few, you know, two-in-one interviews that we've done, but we have a very specific topic that we're going to be delving into today. But let me quickly introduce to you both Julian and Chris. Julian Kia is a bilingual serious game facilitator and a team coach based in Berlin. Though activating learning environments with minds on workshops methods, he enables, or through actually, he enables teams to exchange ideas authentically, promote mutual understanding, and strengthen their cooperation. Of course, these methods include trainings from the back of the room, Chiagi's interactive training and teaching strategies, agile classrooms, open space technology, and Lego serious play, to name just some of them. He is also a Kanban management professional, a certified Scrum Master and a product owner, and holds a degree in business administration and a master's of business administration from the Steinbeis, or something like that in German, probably, of international business and entrepreneurship. And since 2010, he works for clients and industries such as banking, consulting, e-commerce, aviation, luxury goods, engineering, pharmaceuticals, and insurance. And his mantra is rediscover learning, work smarter. On to Chris. He is a proactive, principle-centered evangelist of the Agile philosophy. As you can see, Agile, Scrum, and all these things are part of the center of this episode today, because Chris is also passionate about driving continuous improvement and collaboration to improve Agile ways of working. He uses a combination of personal coaching, workshops, and training, and games, of course, to help solve problems across organizations, within teams, and with individual. So that is a bit about both. Is there, Julian, Chris, is there anything else that I've missed that you probably want to mention before we kick off?
We know each other since ages.
That's us, though. I think it was pretty good.
Fantastic. So another thing that I didn't actually mention is that you guys, and that's the reason, that's the what brings us together, at least this time, it is the Debriefing Cube. You might, engagers, you might remember, or not, from the interview with Cedric Pontet, that he mentioned both Chris and Julian and the Debriefing Cube. And first things first, Julian, Chris, what is a Debriefing Cube?
So it's a tool. It's a tool to we've made to help people who have the opportunity to debrief things with their team or with a group of people to do it really well and to get better at doing it.
And to add to that, you know, the tool obviously includes a cube, which has six lenses, so different perspectives. We're definitely going to talk about that later. And it includes tons of questions, like more than 150 debriefing, powerful questions that one could use to prepare or then to interact with learners during or after a simulation or a game.
That sounds fantastic. And just in case you're wondering and you haven't heard this debriefing thing before, you've heard it only in spy movies and so on. Debriefing in this case is what happens after, of course, you have some sort of activity, some learning activity, which could involve simulations, games, and so on. And then you do, you finish that, you sort of get out of the game, the simulated environment, and you say, well, you sort of reflect. It's kind of a reflect time. I don't know if that's that's accurate with what you guys are talking about today, but that is at least the experience we have. Is there anything that you would add to that sort of very wild definition I just gave?
I think it's good. I think we would agree with the word reflect. I think we would also add to that in terms of we absolutely and fundamentally believe that the most important part of the experience that we create when we're using games at work is the debrief, is the reflection at the end of it, because it's the thing that brings everything together and allows us to really make mindfulness and make our bring in, internalize some of the lessons that that game potentially taught us.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, there were times where I started saying, the debriefing is the other half, right, of the game. And then it started that I was saying, well, the game is like only a third. Now I just say the game is like a fourth of your whole intervention, right? Because you get briefed. You do the design, then you do facilitate, and then you want to, you know, have a powerful debriefing to enable learners to convert their experiences to actions in the real world, right? That's what it's all about.
That makes a lot of sense. In fact, we were chatting about this before we started. I mean, at the business school I teach at the university, where we create interactive materials as well, one of the main things when we're creating the simulations that we create in the games, very, very important, is what you do in the debriefing. And in fact, I was a jury, I think was the name, an evaluator or something like that, for an organization. And they were, you know, giving a certificate to this other organization who created this game. One of the comments that the three of the judges that we were there, was the main comment was, this game is fantastic. I'm sure after you leave from this, you probably know new things. The only problem is it's not considering, and literally didn't have any, again, with a facilitator or not, it didn't have a debriefing. So our main comment was, maybe even if you learn things, you have them sort of interiorized in a very subconscious way. If you don't bring that to the forefront, you don't make it mindful, you don't realize all those things that you have learned, applying will then be very, very difficult, because you don't know that you don't know, or you don't know that you know. And that makes it a lot. And in my opinion, it was that final phase, even if it's final, if it's, as you were saying, 75%, you know, 20%, whatever that is, it is very important to be able to cement that learning, cement that experience that you had, to be able, in my humble opinion, to be able to do these things. And I think it's fantastic that you created this tool that is geared at changing maybe a little bit our mindsets in that sense. So how did you come up with this idea? How did the debriefing cube come to be?
Well, we can tell you the story. Just on that topic, though, I think you can look at it as a kind of, you measure on hit rate, right? So let's imagine we've played a game where we know that there's some really cool things to learn from this game. Now, you can play the game alone and people will enjoy it and do this, and you'll have a certain hit rate, right? Of people that manage to see from that experience, okay, cool. A couple of epiphanies have occurred. The debrief is the catalyst for that, right? So if we take the time, and as Julian says, we should take a really good amount of time for this to reflect about what just happened and in all sorts of different ways, we start to increase that hit rate, right? We start to get more people seeing that experience and connecting it to their own experience in their own worlds, and then more epiphanies going off, okay? And then you see this magical thing that then begins to happen, is that when one person starts to talk about what they've just perceived from their experience, that triggers more hits and other people as they're starting to see the thing that they've experienced from someone else's point of view, right? And this catalyzation of different points of view, different experiences shared and reflected, means that at the end of that debrief, you really maximize the potential that that game could have had, which we think is absolutely magic.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say, you know, through this debriefing conversation, or maybe even just by posing the questions, you can make this individual experiences, or all of the individual experiences, really into a shared experience for a group or a team. And that's where, yeah, the power comes from.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have to agree with that. And thank you for sort of jumping in and making that point, which was absolutely fantastic. And getting back to the question before, because I do think we draw a lot of inspiration from these things, because it's, I mean, I'm sure we will find a lot of inspiration and a lot of use for the debriefing cube, which we'll get into details right now. But that stage of how did you come up with it? What happened? What triggered it maybe as well? Like, I'd like to get the engagers into your minds in that sense, so that we can also, again, draw inspiration and see maybe some of the engagers will get into something similar as well.
Yeah. So look, we have both been part of the Play for Teen community, and we both have been at the first Play for Teen in Romania, Timișoara.
And that was 2017, right? So 3 years ago. In fact, 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And of course, we offered a couple of sessions, and we observed each other's, and eventually we started talking or seeing that we were asking the same debriefing questions over and over, right? Oh, what did you observe? How did you feel? What was this experience like? You know, and everyone has his or her favorite debriefing questions, which are, you know, good in a sense. And then, Chris and I, we just kept this conversation on, Chris, I don't know, for a year via Zoom and Skype, and just talking about what would be if we could, you know, unlock different angles, or if we could, minimize blind spots, both sides, right? From the participants and player side, but also from the facilitator side. And that was the initial start, wasn't it? Chris, did I forget something in that story?
Well, yeah, you're very kind, but Julian knows that that's slightly less even than he's admitting, because he's already, when I met Julian, he was already excellent at this, right? Julian is excellent at most things, very annoying as a person. and he had observed me using the same debriefing questions quite a lot, and but we had gotten friendly enough for him to be comfortable to challenge me on that, which is wonderful. So actually, I think I recall, Julian, that actually within the same weekend we drafted the first debriefing cube. Very simple, very embryonic, but we had this epiphany that this ability that we all expected to have, the skill set to be able to, you know, facilitate a game and then lead a great debrief, is just taken for granted, right? We assume that everyone can just do it, and it isn't particularly well loved or well written about, you know, that you can't go and train to get to become a good debriefer. If we think about it, it's absolutely necessary and key, if we are to be able to lead people with this type of experience and help them get the most out of it. So it's a problem. This is a problem, right? We're in this whole community, which is founded upon playfulness and gaming as a vehicle to learn, which requires this art form called debriefing. And yet, you know, if we look around, it isn't particularly mastered, right? Mm-hmm. Julian, you know, as being an exception, I would say, the generally speaking, people sort of just blunder through it, get through it because they know they have to, even though it's uncomfortable. So we thought maybe we should do something about that. Maybe we could build something to help people get better at this thing, you know, find the pathway to mastery. And that's what we designed in that weekend. We put it together. Playful Teamworks is an open space, so we just took a bit of time out. We got some paper and some pens, and we created this thing, and then we tested it, I think, in the same weekend.
Yeah, in that weekend, and then I guess the first I remember when I was scribbling the icons, that was when I flew back from Luxembourg. So I guess like half a year later or so, we presented it at another Play for Teen in Luxembourg, and then, you know, got some early feedback, obviously, on the questions and the lenses. I guess they weren't really called lenses back in the days. And I guess the original version also had like a seventh lens that was inside of the cube, but, you know, that was just too complex in one way. But look, let's be honest. There are lots of, you know, game descriptions out there, books and websites, etc. And of course, they will feature one or two, maybe even more, debriefing questions. But what they're losing is the context that you specifically are offering and facilitating the game, the topic of the day that you want to be discovered, that you were hired for, that you had on the agenda or have on the agenda, and the players. I mean, who are your participants? What are they up to? What is their language, right? What are they observing? And then obviously personal preferences of the facilitator, right? So I guess we need a whole set of awareness during the simulation and before in the design process. And we need definitely to nudge lots of facilitators out there that there are more than 20 questions that one could ask.
Or one.
Or one, yeah.
So you're I would say it seems, at least from the outside, that you are basically inspired by making questions. Would that be an appropriate observation?
I guess I was inspired by Julian, and we were inspired by the opportunity. The questions came quite a bit later, actually. The cube began with the lenses, is what they came to be called, the lenses. It's called a cube, by the way. So if you can imagine in your mind now a cube, dice, yeah? We called it that because we came up with seven, as you mentioned, the internal, but six different sides we could think about as different ways to approach the debriefing questions, different sorts of lines of questioning or explorations or curiosity you can just take those six different things and debrief every situation in each of those ways, which kind of takes from where we were beginning, which was like we were in a place where everyone was asking one or two or three sort of standard questions, giving us, you know, six different pools of different questions to explore, which is where it began, and then it kind of evolved from there.
And I was inspired by the conversation we started, and again I remember us putting together a first draft and then the lenses and really discussing every word and challenging us and experimenting with it, testing it, obviously the early feedback, and then going out there and just asking that question, what is your favorite debriefing question and have you considered using XYZ, right? And then eventually the list became better and better, and the debriefing cube became a product, right, which we are giving away free. I don't know if we've mentioned that this is all like a Creative Commons licensed, because we think this is way more important than us making money out of it,
which is not illegal, it is not immoral, but it is very, very, very nice that you guys are giving this away for free. Absolutely, for sure, and that is absolutely fantastic as well. I mean, as part of the community or the potential people that could be utilizing this, I would definitely have to thank you guys for offering this sort of openly. And now that we're getting into it, we know where it comes from. Can you spend 5-8 minutes explaining? Of course, remember, this is a podcast. Usually, things like a cube are easier seen than other things. But I mean, I'm sure you've done this a few times, and we have a very smart audience as well. Our engagers have been through this many times. So can you give us again, 5, maybe 10 minutes explanation of how the cube would work, lead us into where we can find maybe a bit more visual information as well?
All right, Chris, I'll start and then you just jump in, or we take turns, right? So
yes,
the cube, this card game, 150 yes. questions, and a dice. That's the setup, right? And I'll go and explain the lenses, and then we can maybe read some questions and the how to use the set of tool or the tool then in general, maybe. All right. So let's start with the lenses. Okay. Six lenses, six side of a die. And it's all about the goal. So you can, focus your learners after or even before simulation on the goal or on the process or on group dynamics, on communication, obviously, on emotions or on the takeaways. Right. So these are the six lenses, and every lens comes with a couple of questions, and it is a card deck, literally. Right. It's a deck of cards. You can print them out. You can cut them, and then you will have four questions on every card. You will have a main question, and then as the conversation is going on, you might want to make use of the deepening questions, as we call them, or follow up questions. Okay. And how can you use them? When you design a workshop, a meeting, a learning experience, you can, of course, have a look at the set and pick your favorite questions, right? pick the questions that, again, make sense for the topic at hand, for the group that you will be facilitating, and of course, personal preferences. And for that, and I think this is, I don't know, it's underrated. People tend to forget. There are also some cards in the deck where you can write your own favorite question. So we strongly encourage every facilitator to not just copy and paste our tool and to use those questions exactly as they're written, but to, you know, think about, who are you focusing? What is the language that they would like to use? And maybe you have wonderful coaching or powerful question asking skills, and then you can obviously add them to the set. All right, Chris, over to you.
Yeah, so that's the kind of the inspiration thing. So thinking as a facilitator, how I would use the deck is that way, really, is that I'm thinking about the game I'm about to play, or the experience you're about to have. I'm thinking about, you know, what I expect to happen. Therefore, I can pick some kind of cool questions which will seem like they have a good flow to them. And it gives me something of a preparation so that when I go into the debrief, I'm kind of armed and ready to ask some cool questions. Sometimes just going through the deck kind of inspires you. Oh, that's a really nice question. Maybe I can just do a version of that. And often what happens, I have to then pare back all of these wonderful questions into a series of, okay, these are the right questions, and then take them in. Things sometimes change when you do the debrief, but at least you have that. I know I'm no longer going to be asking the one standard how did you feel type question. I'm going to ask lots of different questions and looking at lots of different angles. So what happened next is really interesting, actually. This is evolutionary design at its best. We discovered that part of our rationale in designing this tool was we had a persona in mind. We were thinking about a new facilitator, someone who's new to facilitation and who's facilitating their first game. Okay, that's our persona. This is the person we really wanted to help, right? Because we feel like if we help that person, we're probably helping everybody else as well. And what we realized is that actually we could use this tool, so these questions, in a way that's very self-organized, so that you don't need to have that ability to stand in front of people and ask them lots of questions and hear their answers and ask more questions and follow up and go deeper and go wider and all those sorts of things you do in a normal debrief. You can give them this deck of cards and allow them to find a question and ask that question of each other in their group or in their team. And then the whole experience of the debrief and the conversation that ensues becomes to some extent self-organized, which is kind of cool because it takes away any requirement of facilitation skill. And it also takes away the limitation of scale. So if you want to run a big experience with, hundreds of people, the using the tool in this way, where people can find their own questions and reflect and lead their own reflection in small groups, is a magical thing.
Mm.
So this is one of the next ways of using the tool is to, there's kind of two ways to go about it. Either you give them the whole deck and we give them a dice. The dice it's got the six lenses on it rather than numbers or dots. Mm-hmm. And they use the dice to randomize a reflection question, and they ask that question of each other to reflect upon the experience they had. And you might think, okay, well, how do you know that's going to be relevant? And that's one of the questions that was like in my mind when we ran this as an experiment. Is the question you're going to get randomized always relevant? But there's something magical happens with the art of conversation and the human brain that kind of draws connections to the question that you ask, whether you would have asked that question to begin with or not. And the people find those connections and have a great conversation anyway. So it's kind of cool. The other way to do this is that you can do the preparation thing, right? So if you know that actually this is a really nice series of questions, which kind of explore the experience, that they've just had in a certain way, you can give them that series and they can go through the questions one by one, asking each other those questions and then exploring it. And then you could then finish up that entire sort of experience with some sharing, so that remember we want to get that kind of catalyst effect of more people hearing and being inspired by other people, and then your debrief is kind of nailed.
Mm-hmm. And did there even
you know, some ways in between that, right? For example, you could give every learner one card and have them interact in, you know, in a series of conversations with other players and, you know, their question. And I think, Chris, what I love about this self-debriefing approach, or if you break up a larger group or even a small group into individual debriefing conversations, there are two things that are magical about that. Number one, the time to speak about your experience after a simulation or a game is reduced. Okay. So you can, again, this is just a half a minute thing. Okay. Here's some cards, find a partner, talk about the questions. Okay. So while the experience is still fresh, you can still sense it and feel it, and the memory is still fresh, you can already digest it and talk about it and hear from others. Okay. That's what I love. And obviously you can harvest simultaneously from many players in the room and even observers, okay, if we integrate them, of course, into the debriefing. And that's something that I just, yeah, love about it. And for that, we even have a self-debriefing card with instructions. So you don't even have to read it as a facilitator. You just give them a card and it says, okay, read this card, make sure that everyone speaks, start the conversation using the ice or then the main question, et cetera, et cetera.
So you guys basically made a game for debriefing games, or learning games at least, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds absolutely fantastic. And I do have a question. Like, it sounds like it's very self-organized, and I'm sure it is, but my question is, how do you know it's over? I mean, when does the game, what's the end game here?
You have to time box it. So this is an interesting thing we discovered when we first tried this as an experiment. Right, we played a really simple game, right? So I think it was Go, or we've subsequently done it with like simple games like Counter 33 and Boing, I think we did that. So really, like, these are like warm-ups. They're not really like, they're not like your really big concept games where there's lots to learn. They're kind of small warm-up activities. There's still learnings in them, but they're much more subtle. So we expected to... We just wanted, because really just needed to create an experience so that we could test the tool out, right? So we created the simplest and most basic experience we could think of, and then set people up into small groups of three or four, gave them all a deck of cards each, and then say, go debrief. We were actively facilitating. So we're just watching and listening and sensing, and, you know, quite ready to pull people back together again when it feels like they're running out of steam, except they didn't run out of steam. Yeah, they carried on. And it's like, Jesus, this is like, we're 20 minutes into debriefing a 5-minute game. That's weird. So you have to time box it, because it's a conversation starter. It's a conversation enabler. It invites people to talk about things, and they can really get in that zone. Yeah, so I think you have to give a little bit of limit to that. And some of the things that Julia mentioned earlier, that using liberating structures a bit to maybe govern some of that interaction is a useful thing to help you keep it time boxed.
And I would add, you know, as we all know, if you attend a conference, and then of course you want to explore new tools, you want to be inspired, you want to discuss, you want to have those endless discussions that go on all night long until you know, we all start to play werewolves. But we shouldn't forget that if you have a team, if you are hired to facilitate a workshop or a training, you do have a context, right? And you do have a topic. So I would say it ends when you are moving towards that zone that you want, or you want to help, or you want to facilitate your learners to explore and to touch and to discuss and to see and to reflect on. Okay. So that's why it's not that, you know, we hand out the cards and then we just, you know, ring a bell after half an hour and hopefully they'll have some meaningful conversation in a while. you as a facilitator still need to, you know, that's our job, right? You need to be there. You need to sense, as Chris said. You need to observe. You need to hear. You need to listen. What are they talking about? Is this a fruitful conversation? Does this conversation add value to where you are going and your design is going? And yep, definitely time box. And listen and be open, be ready to be surprised, as we say, right? Because, you know, it's so amazing. Chris mentioned, you know, the Boing game or the Go game, or, you know, again, probably with every game that we facilitators facilitate, you sometimes, you know, you know what's going to happen. You know what they're going to say. Do you know exactly the minute they will have a problem? And then you give them the hint, right? But let's go back for a second. You design and facilitate, games or learning games, serious games, so that your learners can make an experience. So why don't we step back for a moment and just are willing and are ready to be surprised. So listen to your learners, see what they are focusing on. And that might be something completely different than you have, you know, on your agenda. But maybe that adds more value to their day-to-day than, you know, what you have just, planned out for them to discover. So that's also, I think, a big reminder we should always say.
Makes a lot of sense, actually. I think those are great reminders as well.
It's just on that point. I think that's such an important characteristic of the thing that's for me one of them. Another magical moment that happened is just thinking very personally. In the past, when I facilitated a game, I've fallen into the trap of aborting the debrief and then telling people this is what you should have learned, right? This is why we played the game, right? This is the thing I hoped you would learn from the game, right? Because it's super easy to do that as a facilitator, as a coach, right? Because I know why I played the game in the first place, and this is what I wanted you to see. I see lots of coaches doing that. I see lots of coaches go into that place of trying to download the epiphanies rather than to culture them. Using the cube in the way we've explained, right? When you've now distributed the learning, you've distributed the conversation, you can't do that anymore, right? You have to step back and allow your participants to make from the experience whatever they will make from that experience. And sometimes that's not going to be what you expected it to be, and that's okay. Yeah. And I think it's a marvelous sort of characteristic that helps us be better facilitators.
And let me add, Rob, two more ways how you could use this card deck. Okay, it's also a card deck, and we do encourage you to either cut it and you have the cards at hand. So while you are observing your group engaging in a learning game or serious game or agile game, you can flick through the cards, literally questions, and then select them in real time, right? So that is also powerful. You might have prepared some questions, but then you sense and then engage with the field or the energy or the topics and the flow of the engagement of your learners. And another way would be, and that's something that I'm doing more and more, you could even share one or two debriefing questions before the game, priming your learners to obviously a specific observation that they might be able to make. Again, you really want to use this carefully. As Chris just mentioned, you know, sometimes we just have in mind what should happen and what should be discovered and then what should be said afterwards. But that's also a nice way to just say, okay, at the end of the game, I will ask you, you know, what type of miscommunication was there? You're just naming a random question from the deck.
That makes sense. I think the sort of the end game there is a key point, because otherwise you can get sort of lost, as you guys were saying, and get lost in the process, so to speak. But I think it makes a lot of sense, like dealing with it that way. I think it's a fantastic solution. Is there, I don't know, is there, I mean, we're basically on getting to the end of our time together today, but is there a quick example, a time, I don't know, again, without revealing anything you can't reveal, but a time you've seen it used, you used it yourself, that particularly reminds you of something very powerful? We like to get into examples, of course, that always helps.
I mean, you know, I've used it a lot in various workshops and offsites and things. I guess for me, that the powerfulness comes in because we created this thing, right? And if you've ever created anything, you'll know that you're never 100% happy with it. Yeah, you're never completely sold upon this. Is always going to work, right? Because we made this, and it's just something we came out of our heads. And for me, the magic is like, you know, is in that listening and the sensing, and you hear people talking and reflecting and you can see them that, oh yeah, the conversation's going and they're talking about some cool stuff, and what those guys are talking about over there is completely different to what those guys are talking about over there, but it's all on point. It's all about the experience. And then you can start to get this sense of relief that, okay, yeah, this is they're getting some cool outcomes here. They're getting some cool thoughts and concepts coming across, and you know, and almost you're going to get like an early feeling that my job of facilitator is done, yeah, because they have just nailed it, right? They've deduced from the experience everything I'd hoped that I would do.
And for me, it's I would say the inclusiveness that, you know, with not only the set or the variety of the questions, but also how it is designed with, you know, the cards and the dies, and, you know, it just invites to add to adding value, to add to the reflection, to add to the group, and then, you know, eventually to add to this shared experience, and to not only see and observe why someone did something or why someone acted that way or didn't act that way, but also to make this implicit knowledge explicit, so that the teams or the groups can then really connect to, let's call it motives or the reason why, or selective you know, observation skills, or that they really connect to each other, literally, right? And that's powerful. And if a question helps, then that would be the tool of my choice.
Absolutely, sounds very, very sensible. It makes a lot of sense. So, Julian, Chris, thank you very much both for, of course, creating this debriefing cube and, of course, putting it out there, but also for being with us today. I know Julian is a very recent or relatively recent father. So, you know, all those fathering businesses that you know of are there, and, you know, you still have to do them. And taking away some of that time from all those things that you have to do, your child is probably sleeping at this point, risking the child to wake up is an accomplishment as well. It seems like we succeeded in not waking Julian's kid up at this point.
Yeah, I'll have to look now.
But thanks to both of you for, anyways, I mean, it's not just Julian. Chris, of course, made an effort to be with us today and sharing all of this information with us, with the engagers. Is there any final, you know, piece of advice anywhere you want to lead us to? Of course, where we can find more information about the debriefing cube before we say it's game over.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, look, the debriefing cube, and this is also a big community effort. So we started in English language, obviously, and then we had, as you all know, I'm based in Berlin. I do speak German, but we had learners and players engaging in translating the tool into German, into French, into Dutch, into Russian, and Italian and Spanish are on the way. So, you know, this is also a big thank you for everyone who's helped us to translate those questions into different languages.
Big shout out, for sure.
And secondly, yes, there is also a product now. If you don't want to copy it and you just want to buy it, which is totally fine, it's a reasonable price, you can also buy the card decks. They are sustainably produced, printed very, very locally, just around the corner of my house, and they're packed and sent and shipped out in an integration workshop here south of Berlin. So that's just another reason to order them. And besides that, thedebriefingcube.com, thedebriefingcube.de, and you can download and grab the PDF directly from there. You don't need to enter a password, no email address, just go to the website and enjoy reading.
Sounds absolutely fantastic, guys. Thanks again for all your efforts, all the things that you're doing, that you've been doing, you're going to be doing in the future with the Debriefing Cube. Chris, I don't know if there's anything else.
I just have to add to that in terms of, we'd love to hear from you, right? So if you are using the tool, if it is working for you, if you're having experiences, please reach out and tell us about them, because it really helps us feel good about, you know, the debrief, the art of debriefing across the world is getting better. And also, then, this isn't the end for our journey, right? We have more ideas coming in the future about how we can accelerate this art form even more.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks very much for your time, for your efforts, for being here with us today. However, at least for now and for today, it is time to say that it's game over.
You can reach us at hello@keylearning.net. We're looking forward to your suggestions, comments, and feedback.